The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, the Green Bay Packers are starting the season off right this season. I mean, these first two games that they've started, man, they have just come right out the gate and kicked some ass. Last night, they took down the Washington Commanders 27-18, and it was all Green Bay all night. I mean, their defense made this the Commanders' offense very ineffective, and the Green Bay offense was pretty much unstoppable for the most part. There were a few drives where, yeah, the Commanders were able to knock them back. But for the most part, Green Bay pretty much was able to do whatever they wanted last night on the offensive side of the ball. When it comes to the offensive side of the ball with the Commanders, though, I will say that what I've noticed with them in these first two games, yes, they got the win last week over the New York Giants, but they didn't score a lot of points, and the offense looked pretty slow. And then in this game, they did not look really good. I mean, they've got a lot of weapons on offense, but they just didn't have many explosive plays these last 2 weeks. So we'll see if that's just really the beginning of the season jitters for them, or if this is going to be more of a problem for them as the season wears on. But as far as offense goes, the Green Bay Packers didn't look like they had an issue with offense. Jordan Love went 19 for 31, 292 yards and two touchdowns. And then their tight end, Tucker Kraft, he had 124 yards and a touchdown. So just an all-around two games for the Green Bay Packers to start the season. And like I said, with the Commanders, it's looked like it's been a rough start for them on the offensive side of the ball right now. Moving on to the Sunday week two matchups. Actually, before I get to the week two matchups, my head-to-head with Simon Ruvalcaba this week, he actually just went up another game on me. Last night, I had Washington. He had Green Bay. And so he's 1-0 to start the weekend. I am 0-1 to start the weekend. So that puts me at 5 games behind him right now. But he needs the lead because I've kicked his ass for 4 seasons in a row. So let's see what happens here. But he did not get me his picks yet for the weekend. So unfortunately, I won't be giving you his picks other than the Green Bay Packers pick, because that's what he told me last night. But he has yet to give me his weekend picks. So let's start off with this weekend's matchups, beginning with the Cleveland Browns at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 12.5-point favorite. Yes, this is the division matchup, but the Cleveland Browns don't have a lot going on with their roster, and they were talking shit about Derrick Henry this week, acting like, oh my God, he's not that good of a running back, when it's like, this is probably one of the best, if not the best running back in the league. So how would you just not talk shit about him? Even though he had a fumble last week, he still ran all over the Buffalo Bills. And that's what I expect the Ravens to do this week. As a matter of fact, the Ravens usually bounce back big from a loss, and so that's what I have them doing this week against the Cleveland Browns. I've got the Ravens winning 41-7. Then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Bengals are a 3.5-point favorite. The Bengals, I expect them to really bounce back and have a really solid offensive outing in this one. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I think there's a lot of questions with them, even though they got the win last week, but they just beat the Carolina Panthers. So it's not like they beat some really powerhouse team. I think this week's going to be a lot different. I feel like the Bengals are going to come right out the gate and really have a nice offensive game this week and really handle the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've got the Cincinnati Bengals winning 28-17. Then we have the New York Giants at the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 5.5-point favorite, and Dak owns the Giants. He's only lost once in his entire career to the Giants. I believe his record is 14-1, something crazy like that, but he always kicks the shit out of the Giants, number one. Number two, the Giants looked like crap last week. Their offense looked exceptionally ineffective. And I really would not be shocked if we see Russell Wilson get benched here in the next couple of weeks, especially if he has a terrible outing this week. And that's actually what I kind of expect from the Giants this week. I'm not expecting a good outing. I feel like the Cowboys are going to absolutely demolish them in this game. I have the Cowboys winning 30-14. Then we have the Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are 4.5-point favorite. Both of these teams looked really ineffective last week on the offensive side of the ball. They weren't really impressive in any way, shape, or form. I do expect Detroit to bounce back this week. I feel like they're going to have a much better... They're going to look more like Detroit did last year. But I still think it's going to be a difficult battle. I feel like both of these defenses are really solid, and I feel like they're going to play a huge role in this one. But I still think the offenses are going to come out on top and get some scores. But I just kind of feel like Detroit is the better team, and I think they're going to start getting it going in this week. And I've got Detroit winning a close one, 23-21. Then we have the New England Patriots at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 1.5-point favorite. I think both of these two teams are just terrible. But the Miami Dolphins are already having players-only meetings, and it's only week two. That's usually a very, very bad sign when your team's already having player-only meetings, because that usually means your team is doing terrible. The New England Patriots, I have no hopes for them at all in any way, shape, or form. But with that being said, since both of these two teams are terrible, I feel like it's going to end up being a good game, a close game, and probably a sloppy game. And I don't believe in the Miami Dolphins at all. And when you're having players only meetings right now, that's a big red flag. And so I actually have New England winning a close one, 17-16. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Niners are a 6.5-point favorite. Now, I did print this sheet out a couple days ago, so it's possible that line could have moved, especially because now Brock Purdy is not going to be playing in this game, and he may actually be out the next 5 weeks. He's going to be out 2 to 5 weeks with turf toe, and then also George Kittle is on the injured list as well. He is going to be out at least the next 4 weeks, so the San Francisco 49ers are going to be missing basically their only two good guys on offense, besides Christian McCaffrey, who I wouldn't be shocked if he gets injured in this game. But anyways, so that means Mac Jones is going to be the starting quarterback. Mac Jones has been trash his entire career in the NFL so far, so I'm not expecting any miracles in this one. But I did have the Niners winning this one even before the Brock Purdy news, and I'm going to keep it that way because the New Orleans Saints are just not a good team. I feel like they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year, and I feel like even though the Niners are going to be missing a lot of guys, I still think, you know, this could be a Christian McCaffrey game where if you just hand the ball off to Christian McCaffrey, he could probably run all over this New Orleans defense. I do think it's going to be a close one, but I still have the Niners winning this one 20-13. Then we have the Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets. Right now, the Bills are a 7.5-point favorite. The Bills look real good. They look like they're going to be one of the top teams in the league. The Jets, I just feel like there's a ton of questions about them, and I think we're going to find out there's a lot more questions about them after this week as well. I kind of feel like this is going to be a straight-up domination game from Buffalo. Yes, it is a division matchup, and usually those tend to be a little bit closer, but I just feel like the Jets are not a good team. Buffalo is a much better team. I feel like Buffalo is going to dominate this one 31-17. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now, the Steelers are a 2.5-point favorite. The Seahawks, I don't think there's anything good about them. And the Steelers, now that they have Aaron Rodgers, they at least have a legit quarterback who knows how to win games. He's going to make his offensive players, even if they're a bunch of no-names, he's going to make them better. That was shown last week, and I think that's going to be the same thing this week. I do think the defense is going to step it up more in this one, and they're going to be a deciding factor. But I think the Steelers are going to win this one easily, 23-10. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Rams are a 5.5-point favorite. I like what I see from the Rams on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. This defense is young and hungry, and I feel like they're going to be getting at everybody this season, especially this Tennessee Titans offense, who had a horrific game in this last one. So I think they're going to eat in this game. Also, on the offensive side of the ball, you look at it. They got Devontae Adams, Puka Nacua, Kyren Williams, and Matthew Stafford. All of these guys can explode for a lot of yards and a lot of points, and I just kind of feel like that's what this game is going to be. I think it's going to be all Rams all day, 27-7. Then our afternoon games, we have the Carolina Panthers at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, the Cardinals are a 6.5-point favorite. For me, I already said it, with the Carolina Panthers, I think they're going to be a surprise team that people need to really watch out for. With that being said, I don't think they're going to really get a lot of wins, but they're going to make it difficult for teams like the Cardinals. Because I think the Cardinals, they have firepower, but I still think they have a lot of work to do. And I think they're going to get worked in this game. I think it's going to be a close battle. And I think it's going to be one of those back and forth games where it's probably going to come down to like a last second field goal or something of that nature. I do have Arizona winning 21-20 because, like I said, with Carolina, I think they're just going to be a team that pushes other teams to the brink, but then falls short in certain arenas. I do think they will get some solid wins, but I just think they'll fall short this week. Then we have the Denver Broncos at the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, the Broncos are a 2.5-point favorite. I think both of these teams are pretty similar to each other. I don't think there's a lot to be impressed about with either team, but they do have firepower. They're able to go off, and I think they're very similar teams, so it should actually be a very good game. I look at both of these defenses, and I think they can make some big plays, but I just kind of trust the Denver Broncos more than I do the Indianapolis Colts. So I'm going with the Broncos in a close one, 21-17. Then we have the Philadelphia Eagles at the Kansas City Chiefs. This, of course, is a Super Bowl rematch from last year. Right now, the Eagles are a 1.5-point favorite. You know, what I saw from the Eagles last week is they're basically the same old Eagles. Have a lot of firepower on the offensive side of the ball and really difficult to stop. Kansas City Chiefs, on the other hand, they did nothing to improve this team all offseason, and that showed in the last game. And I wouldn't be shocked if they get trucked in this one. I actually don't really think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be dominating this team this year. Now, of course, I still expect them to make the playoffs. I just feel like anytime they face a team like the Eagles, I think they're going to really, really struggle. I mean, you saw what happened against the Chargers last week. They did not play a good game on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. And I think that's going to be an issue for them in this one. As a matter of fact, I feel like the Eagles are going to run all over them with Saquon Barkley. I feel like Jalen Hurts is going to have no issues with this defense. And then I think the Eagles defense is going to have a field day with Kansas City Chiefs offense because they don't have, like I said, don't have a lot of firepower. And there's a good chance Xavier Worthy's probably not playing in this game. He was practicing and all that. But I kind of think it's going to be a long, long, long shot for him to play. So they don't have a lot going on the offensive side of the ball other than Patrick Mahomes. So with all those questions, I actually think the Eagles are going to dominate this game 28-17. And then the Sunday night football game, we have the Atlanta Falcons at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now, the Vikings are a 4.5-point favorite. The Falcons are just a trash can ass team to me, where the Vikings, you know, J.J. McCarthy showed he's going to fit in with this offense. He has a lot of weapons, regardless of what you think is going to happen with McCarthy this season. He's got a lot to choose from on the offensive side of the ball, and the Vikings have a solid defense as well. The Falcons, like I said, trash can ass team. But with that being said, I think they'll keep this one close, but I've got the Vikings winning this one 20-16. Now, moving on to what it's all about this weekend, and that is Canelo Alvarez versus Terrence Crawford. This is going to be a battle. These are the two best boxers in the game right now. Canelo's coming in with a 63-2-2 record. Crawford's coming in with a 41-0 record. So he's coming in undefeated. Neither of these dudes has ever been knocked down in their entire career. With that being said, I think that's going to remain the same in this one. I feel like this is going to be a great battle between two excellent boxers. But my thing is with this one is I'm leaning towards Canelo. Not only because he's got more experience, especially at this weight class, because this is the first time that Crawford is coming up in this weight class, and he's going up significantly in this weight class. He's never fought in this weight class, and you're going at the dog of this weight class. So while I think Crawford is going to be an excellent matchup here for him, I don't think it's going to be an ass kicking either way. But if it ends up being an ass kicking, I think it's going to be on Canelo's side. I think Canelo will dominate Crawford more simply because Crawford is not, this is his first time at this level. He doesn't fight as much as Canelo does. Canelo fights about 2 to 3 times a year, whereas Crawford, he's only fought, I think, like once in the last year and a half. So, you know, it's a little bit, I just kind of feel like Canelo's experience. Canelo is, he's just got amazing technical boxing skills. And that's not a shot at Crawford because I think Crawford's an excellent boxer too. I really enjoy the hell out of both of these guys. I'm personally looking forward to this, especially because it's on Netflix. This is no pay-per-view shit. So if you got Netflix, you got access to this excellent matchup, which I like I said, I feel like it's going to go the distance. But I think Canelo's got the edge simply because he fights more. He's been here at this weight level longer than Crawford. And I love Canelo as well. He's my favorite boxer, so of course I'm leaning towards him. But I do think this is going to be a great matchup between two great boxers. I don't think it's going to be a knockout either way. One dude might get knocked down, but I feel like it's going to be just a straight-up mano-a-mano amazing fight we get here. And like I said, it's great because it's on Netflix. So if you got Netflix, any of us can watch it. And that is what's best. So enjoy the fight, y'all, because I know I will. All right, y'all, moving on to baseball. Usually I'm just touching on the playoffs and the playoff picture in at this point in time. But we had a historical night last night. So the Yankees beat the Detroit Tigers 9-3. But the big news was Aaron Judge. He hit back-to-back home runs, two home runs last night, which ties him for fourth all time on the Yankees, the New York Yankees all-time home run list. He is now tied with Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio is literally one of the greatest to ever do it. And just to watch what Aaron Judge is doing, this is phenomenal. So he has tied DiMaggio. He's obviously going to pass DiMaggio before the season ends. So he's going to be at number three. And it's like I said, I just love Aaron Judge, everything about Aaron Judge. I've enjoyed his amazing career. And just to see shit like this is just so amazing. And to see him tie DiMaggio, Joe DiMaggio, one of the greatest baseball players, as far as Yankees go, Joe DiMaggio is one of the top Yankees. So just to even be up there and to be in these names, and Aaron Judge's career is not over. Aaron Judge, I feel like he's 28, 29. I know he's in his late 20s, almost about to hit 30 maybe. So Aaron Judge potentially has about another 10 years of his career. If he lasts till he's about 40, you know, of course injuries are a big deal, but like, let's just say he lasts another 10 years and, keeps it up at a solid pace. I don't know, man, Aaron Judge, we'll see where he ends up at the end when it's all said and done. But, to tie Joe DiMaggio at number four all time on this Yankees list, that's a pretty big deal. So congratulations to Aaron Judge. And of course, the Yankees got to win as well. So let's get into the playoff picture and how things are looking right now. In the American League, the top dog is the Toronto Blue Jays. They lead the American League East right now. They've got actually a 3-game lead over the New York Yankees. Then in the Central, the Detroit Tigers are in they lead the Central, but they are in second place in the American League. They currently have an 8.5-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians. And then right now in the American League West, the Seattle Mariners tied it up yesterday with a win. Them and the Houston Astros are currently deadlocked in a tie for the American League West. So we'll see how this division plays out. I kind of feel like, you know, the East, even though the Blue Jays got the lead, the Yankees are starting to surge, and we could see things getting shaken up there. The Central, obviously, Detroit's winning that one, and the West, that could be another one where it comes down to the last week. And then we have the American League wild card spots right now, the top spots, New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, and then, of course, the Houston Astros and Seattle Mariners are tied, so whoever doesn't win the division would have that last wild card spot. And we have the Texas Rangers, the Cleveland Guardians, and the Kansas City Royals lingering on those wild card spots. Then turning to the National League, right now the number one top dog is from the National League Central. The Milwaukee Brewers have a 5.5-game lead over the Chicago Cubs. Then in the second place spot in the National League, in the National League East, we have the Philadelphia Phillies with an 11-game lead over the New York Mets. And then in the National League West, we have the Los Angeles Dodgers with a 2.5-game lead over the San Diego Padres. So obviously it's looking like Milwaukee probably has their division on lock. Philadelphia obviously has their division on lock. And I feel like the Dodgers have their division on lock, even though it's not by that much of a margin. But still, I feel like they're going to win it. Then the National League wildcard spots are currently held down by the Chicago Cubs, the San Diego Padres, and the New York Mets, with the Cincinnati Reds, San Francisco Giants, and Arizona Diamondbacks lingering. All right, so I haven't done it in a couple weeks because I was out of town, and then also I was doing my football prediction. So now let's get back into the last of my Trop 10 MLB GOATs. We're doing the last decade, which is the 2010s decade, Trop 10 MLB GOATs from the 2010s. And let me tell you, especially the top five on this was a really, really difficult list because I've watched all of these dudes. Some of them still in the league, of course. But I mean, the top five, I really, really, really had to think. Number one, I really, really, really had to just, it was like minute things that basically separate the top five. So this top 10 was really probably the most difficult of them all for me. So let's get it started with number 10 on my top 10 MLB goes to the 2010s. Robinson Cano played second base with the New York Yankees from 2005 to 2013, Seattle Mariners from 2014 to 2018, and then the New York Mets from 2019 to 2022. He was basically the most consistent hitter of this era. He career numbers, batting average of a 301, 2,639 hits, 335 home runs, and 1,306 RBI. He won a championship with the New York Yankees in 2009. He is a two-time Gold Glove Award winner and a five-time Silver Slugger Award winner. Yes, he was mostly known for hitting, but he was an excellent second baseman and really just had an excellent career. Yes, he did get in some trouble for steroids towards the end of his career, and then it's just injuries kind of just pushed him out of the game, essentially. But I mean, for a real long time there, especially when he was a New York Yankee, this dude was dominating the league, and every time he came up to bat, he was pretty much getting on base. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, my all-time favorite Giant, Madison Bumgarner, starting pitcher with the San Francisco Giants from 2009 to 2019. Hasn't played in the last couple of years. He hasn't officially retired, but he basically is retired. His career numbers, 134 wins, 124 losses, 347 ERA, and 2,070 strikeouts. He is a three-time champion with the Giants. He won in 2010, 2012, and 2014, and that 2014 playoff run was all Madison Bumgarner. If you do not remember, this dude barely sat a game, and that says a lot about a starting pitcher. He came in, especially in the World Series game. I will never forget Game 7 of the World Series, the 2014 World Series. That is one of my favorite baseball games ever. I was locked into that game because he didn't start that game, but he came in, and it was just such a close margin of error in this game because we needed him, and he came out and won this shit for us. He came out and won I believe it was the NLCS, NLDS. It was one of the two, but that was a run for Madison Bumgarner, and to watch a starting pitcher do what he did and play that way just to continue to win championships, that is why he is my favorite Giant of all time. He's also a two-time Silver Slugger Award winner because he would actually come up to bat and actually get on base. I would love it when it was a Madison Bumgarner day because not only did he pitch out of his mind, but when he would come up to bat, there was a good chance he could hit a home run. And so, which is always shocking when a pitcher does that, but he was just an excellent player, no bullshit, loved Madison Bumgarner, one of my all-time favorite Giants. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, Joey Votto played first baseman with the Cincinnati Reds from 2007 to 2023. His career numbers, batting average of a 294, 2,135 hits, 356 home runs, and 1,144 RBI. He was the MVP in 2010, also won a Gold Glove in 2011, and he was one of the most consistent players in the league. It did not matter how good or bad the Reds were, you knew Joey Votto always came to play every single day. He loved being a Red. He never requested a trade. And he was basically like Robinson Cano. These two guys you knew when they came up to bat, they were probably getting on base, and so you need to learn how to pitch around them better. But Joey Votto, he is a Cincinnati legend, and that says a lot because, I mean, he never really won anything there. It's just he was so beloved. And he never complained. He never gave a shit. He loved being a Cincinnati Red. Whether they were good or bad, this dude always came to play. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, a dude who was still in the league, Paul Goldschmidt, played first base with the Arizona Diamondbacks beginning in 2011, then with the St. Louis Cardinals, and now currently with the New York Yankees. His current career numbers, which of course are going to keep on, which are going to change, batting average of 288, 2,173 hits, 372 home runs, 1,229 RBI, and 174 stolen bases. He was the MVP in 2022. He is a four-time Gold Glove Award winner and five-time Silver Slugger Award winner. He is an all-around baseball player. That's why when the Yankees signed him traded for him in the offseason, I thought this was a good pickup for him or for them because he's not the same MVP type Goldschmidt, but he's a dude who could still go on base, and he's an excellent first baseman still to this day. So Paul Goldschmidt still an excellent baseball player, just not what he used to be, but still an excellent baseball player. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, another one of my favorite San Francisco Giants, Buster Posey, played catcher with the San Francisco Giants from 2009 to 2019, career batting average of a 302, 158 home runs, and 729 RBI. He is also a three-time champion. As a matter of fact, every end to every one of those championships, it's Buster Posey running up to the closer. That is the image I see in every one of those winning championships, those three times. It's just, you just see Buster Posey with a different closer every time, running up to him like, we are the champs again. He was so consistent. He was the leader of the team for sure. Every time he played, you knew he was going to be an excellent catcher. He was going to call a great game, and every pitcher on the team trusted him from top to bottom, and he was just one of the most solid all-around players we have ever had in San Francisco Giants history. He won MVP in 2012, Rookie of the Year in 2010. He was a five-time Silver Slugger Award winner. He won a Gold Glove as well. And just like I said, one of the most all-around Giants you will ever have. And obviously, one of the core players from those championship years. Then at number five on a top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, I cannot believe I put him at number five. But there were others, like I said, slight margins here in these top five. But Mike Trout is number five. He is still in this league, outfielder with the Los Angeles Angels, beginning in 2011, still to this day. So his career numbers are still going to be trucking up out there. But right now, batting average of 295, 1,742 hits, 398 home runs, but actually he hit 399 last night, 1,011 RBI, and 214 stolen bases. Three-time MVP in 2014, 16, and 19, Rookie of the Year in 2012, and a nine-time Silver Slugger Award winner. Another thing I love about Mike Trout, very similar to Joey Votto, does not complain no matter how shitty the Angels have been trash the majority of Mike Trout's career. This dude's barely played in the playoffs at any point in his career, and he never complains. He just goes out there and plays, and for me personally, Mike Trout is one of my favorite hitters to watch. When you watch him hit a baseball, it's like he wants to obliterate this thing. It's like he wants to make it just disappear into thin air when he hits a baseball. I love watching Mike Trout hit a home run. And he's just been an excellent player, and I couldn't believe I put him at number five. But that's the slim margin that these guys have on each other. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, Max Scherzer, still in the league as well, starting pitcher, beginning with the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2008, Detroit Tigers, Washington Nationals, Los Angeles Dodgers, New York Mets, Texas Rangers, and now with the Toronto Blue Jays. Career numbers, 221 wins, 115 losses, 319 ERA, 3,477 strikeouts, which is insane, and he's still going to be adding to that. He is a two-time champion in 2019 and 2023, three-time Cy Young Award winner in 2013, 2016, and 2017. He's thrown two no-hitters, and he did it in 2015. He did it on June 20th of 2015 and October 3rd of 2015. And he also is tied with Roger Clemens, having 20 strikeouts in one game, which is an MLB record. But Max Scherzer has been one of the most dominating pitchers since he came out the gate. And quite frankly, he's still dominating. The only thing that stops him are injuries. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, Clayton Kershaw, starting pitcher still to this day with the Los Angeles Dodgers beginning in 2008. Still playing today. Career numbers right now, 222 wins, 96 losses, which is an excellent record. When I wrote that down, I was like, whoa, because that's good. I mean, I've been doing these decade lists, and that's probably one of the best win-loss records I've seen in the history of baseball right now. 222 and 96, boom. That means you've been doing something good your career. I mean, that also means you've been on good teams. But Kershaw has been one of the most dominating pitchers of this era, hands down. 253 career ERA and 3,037 strikeouts. He's a champion in 2020 and then also last year. MVP of 2014, three-time Cy Young Award winner in 2011, 2013, and 2014. He also won the Triple Crown in 2011 and threw a no-hitter on June 18th of 2014. And I mean, I was shocked I put Clayton Kershaw at three because he could have been number one. I mean, in all honesty, Clayton has been one of the most dominating pitchers of this era, straight up. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, this was hard to not put him at number one, but I had to put him at number two, and that is Miguel Cabrera. Played first base with the Florida Marlins from 2003 to 2007 and the Detroit Tigers from 2008 to 2023. Career numbers, batting average of a 306, 3,174 hits, 511 home runs, and 1,881 RBI. And I mean, this was the best hitter of this decade. I mean, you knew Miguel Cabrera was coming up to hit, and that guy was more than likely knocking it out of the park. He won a championship in 2003 with the Marlins. He's a two-time MVP in 2012 and 2013, Triple Crown Award winner in 2012, and a seven-time Silver Slug Award winner. Like I said, it was a very slim margin between all of these guys. But number one on my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, it is a dude who I have probably the most respect for in anybody in this era. I kind of figured I was going to put him at number one because his resume is great. And there were very, like I said, slight things that separated this top five. But I had to put him at number one, and that is Justin Verlander. Still in the league today, starting pitcher, beginning with the Detroit Tigers in 2005, then the Houston Astros, New York Mets, and now with my San Francisco Giants. Career wins of 265, 157 losses, 333 ERA, and 3,536 career strikeouts. He is a two-time champion in 2017 and 2022 with the Houston Astros. Won MVP in 2011. He is a three-time Cy Young Award winner in 2011, 2019, and 2022. Notice these three pitchers I'm talking about in the top five between Verlander, Kershaw, and Scherzer. All three of them have won three Cy Youngs apiece. How insane is that? When I wrote that down, I was like, these motherfuckers. It's like, it was so hard to even put their resumes up next to each other because they just had very, very, very slim margins. Basically, what put Justin Verlander over everybody is he's got one more championship than all of them. But anyways, he also won a Triple Crown in 2011, Rookie of the Year in 2006, and has thrown three no-hitters, one in 2007, one in 2011, and one in 2019. So, my top 10 MLB GOATs of the 2010s, number 10, Robinson Cano, number 9, Madison Bumgarner, number 8, Joey Votto, number 7, Paul Goldschmidt, number 6, Buster Posey, number 5, Mike Trout, number 4, Max Scherzer, number 3, Clayton Kershaw, number 2, Miguel Cabrera, and number 1, Justin Verlander. All right, y'all, enjoy this stacked weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.